Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jack weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big A to Z show from the Dave in the City studios in Southern California, where we are continuing to battle the coronavirus all around us. And by the time you listen to this program, you could be on lockdown, you could be on shutdown, you could be on any kind of restriction. And I can say safely that wherever you live, you probably have some level of restriction. And that is really saying something, isn't it? You could be anywhere in the world right now, except maybe some parts of Africa, perhaps, and Greenland. But anywhere else, it seems like there's some level of your life that has been what is the word? I was going to say compromise. Compromise isn't really a word. But some element of your life that has been... I guess that is compromise. But what I think the reason why I didn't want to use that word is because I'm concerned of the connotation with your life being compromised. And I mean, I think our lives in terms of our health for the majority of us are still good. But the concept of a virus spreading that fast is pretty scary. And so... we're trying to help lighten the mood a bit with some of these shows, and our A to Z series, well, it continues in that vein. We hope you've enjoyed the show so far. Our last episode was Cocktail Hour with Kristen Syracuse, and he broke down a lot of different types of booze. I recommend that podcast. Check that one out, along with the others, on our feed, Dave in the City Out West on Apple Podcasts. And this time out, we're going to bring in our good friend Chris in Georgia. He normally talks NBA. He will talk NBA again tonight. But we're also going to focus on a new topic that isn't basketball related in our A to Z series. We are now up to the letter D. Let's talk about the draft, but not the NFL draft. We're going to get into drafts on tap. IPA beers all around this great land of ours, and where our friend Chris in Georgia is, the scene is no different. In fact, it's a scene that you don't know about too much if you're listening to this nationally. Georgia's got a good beer scene too, so let's bring him into the show. Chris, good to have you with us tonight. How's it going?
Dave, I was told this was an NBA draft show. Did I have that wrong? I think you pulled the switcheroo on me.
Yes, draft and draft show. Oh, man, not that draft. Oh, I didn't know. It's good to hear your voice again, Chris. It's been a few days, but it's felt like it's been a really long time. I mean...
lots happened.
So much has happened. And depending on when we publish this program, even more could happen by the time from the point that we speak and to the point that you listen to the show. But in the few days since the world shut down. I don't know if I go that far, but since, for all intents and purposes, our way of normalcy has been suspended, it has really been quite a scary time, but also an unusual and strange time. I think strange is probably the bigger word for this, and it's something of the scale just has never been experienced, really. And Chris, I just want to first ask you how you're doing and how the family is doing. I know that everybody has, just about everybody in every country, in every state, every city, has been instructed to, number one, stay away from gatherings. Gatherings are over. Forget it. Any kind of party, they're going to frown upon it. Number two, they've been asked to work from home. But I understand that you work from home pretty frequently. So from your point of view, what are things like right now in terms of your lifestyle amidst the coronavirus outbreak?
Well, if you want an expert on social distancing, you've come to the right place. Because I've been I've been fairly effective at it for almost 10 years now. I have an office. I work from home, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And so if you need tips on work from home, maybe I can be on the W show for that. you know how to reach me. It's the key difference. I mean, one is my kids are out of school now. This is day two. Feels like it's been 3 weeks, but it's only 2 days. And so, which in my opinion is a big relief, just because kids are naturally germ spreaders. Uh-huh. And this virus in particular, it seems like kids are, fortunately they're not susceptible to it. I mean, it doesn't affect them the same way it does elderly folks, which is good, but it also seems like they don't show symptoms like other people. So they are just natural carriers and spreaders, and I just know my kids, and their hygiene habits are not perfect. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just a relief to have them home in a lot of ways. In general, I've been, I've kind of had a cold for like 2 weeks now. Nothing huge, but I've just kind of been taking it easy. So it's funny, we're talking about beer tonight, but I haven't had a beer in like 2 weeks, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
I'm so used to it. Wow.
Yeah. For a while. It's been a while.
Yeah. Did that give you a little extra fear that you were reading about coronavirus and watching reports on it on TV while you had a cold? You're like, uh-oh. I mean, my immune system's already low, and now this is happening. Did you get a little extra worry in there?
I'll tell you, I got a worry. I thought you were going to make a joke about Corona beer, and I was ready to pounce on it. But I got worried because one night I actually did have trouble breathing.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I got very nervous. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a fever this entire time. I've been checking, frequently just to be sure, because I do have two kids and you never know. And, the cases in Georgia in Fulton County, it's not people. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, one of the first people who was identified with to have the, disease was a cook at a Waffle House, and he hadn't been out of the country, and so it's kind of been the way it's been spreading here is sort of a mystery. So I don't know, but beyond that, did it make me nervous? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it made me nervous just because I'm like, well, the symptoms kind of seem to be changing, but shortness of breath is one of them. One of the general characteristics seems to be fever, and I just haven't had a fever at all. So.
Oh, that's good. That is good.
And it's a weird time too, Dave, because I don't know if you've spent any time here, but Georgia, Atlanta is a very green city. Mm-hmm. Lots of trees. I mean, lots of trees. It's like, it'll kind of take your breath away if you ever come here. It's very, very green. And in spring, all the trees blossom and we get tons of pollen, and I was not used to that. I'm still not. So you get allergy season started about, the spring allergy season started about a week and a half ago. And so people are coughing anyways, it's just kind of how it goes down here. So yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff floating in the air. There's coronavirus, there's people, still getting the flu, colds being spread around, even though it's getting warmer, people still getting sick a little bit. So yeah, there's definitely some worry there, and then plus it's, Atlanta's an international city. I mean, we have one of the largest airports in the world. It's an international airport and people come from all over and connecting flights and so forth. And so, so yeah, it's hard not to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it really is. And the way of life now, since things have changed, is extremely different. And it is amazing how much things have changed in just a week. But the defining moment that changed the entire course of world history. I mean, I've sound like Bill Walton saying that, but is it really an exaggeration? The Rudy Gobert incident in the Oklahoma City Utah Jazz game was it, or the Jazz Oklahoma City game? It was unbelievable. And we were talking about it off air before we started recording, but I think there can't be enough said about how much that defined the change in our thinking, in our attitude about the coronavirus, because I think it really just sent that thing right into our face. And since you follow the NBA so closely, I was really interested to hear what you had to say about Gobert, number one, in the beginning, just dismissing the virus and touching the microphones, and literally just moments later, you know, getting ruled out of the game because of a flu. Then, you know, when the game got called off, he got tested positive for coronavirus. It was unbelievable. As we were talking about, from that moment on, you know, brick by brick, layer by layer, every sport shut down. The entire college basketball conference tournament schedule was done. They tried to play half of a game of the Big East game, and even they couldn't make it through that game. They were done too. So for our purposes, the entire college basketball season was over at that point. NBA suspended their season within an hour of that. Baseball shut down days later. Any tournaments, any golf,
hockey,
any
NHL,
hockey was suspended. Everything from sports shut down in North America. Then you're getting other countries in the mix, like EPL eventually shut down. And then you talk about the rest of you. Well, Italy, of course, as we know, Italy has been deluged with this. They probably had the worst time of battling this, not battling the coronavirus. So they already were in the tank from that standpoint. They had already shut their sports down. But everybody else in Europe was starting to fall suit. And it's just incredible that it all, to me, goes back to Rudy Gobert and Tom Hanks to a smaller extent. But I think Rudy Gobert was the more vivid example. So, I mean, how do you process all of that, Chris?
Yeah, I think about when attitudes change, and there's always sort of like a flashpoint. There's a moment in time when people are like, wow, wait, what is this? Because I think, you know, people, you know, in this country tend to be very insular, and, you know, something's happening in China and people are getting sick. Well, China's on the other side of the world. Okay, it's now in Italy. Okay, but, you know, that's still Europe, and it's still, you know, it's the old world. And, yeah, I mean, it was crazy how that kind of broke down, because I think the Tom Hanks thing came out first, and then it might have been an hour later that the Gobert thing was announced. But I think, you know, it's almost like there's a moment where people, it becomes kind of, I don't know if personal is quite the right word, but it becomes something people can identify. And I would say Tom Hanks is huge, because you can't name a more beloved American actor in the last 30 years than Hanks, just in terms of the roles. I mean, there might have been a time when Tom Cruise was that way, but I would say he's not anymore. But Tom Hanks is sort of, you know, this other statesman of the acting community and Hollywood, and people just generally like the guy. And so when he and his wife announced, his kind of very sobering moment, but then I feel like it was like 20 minutes later we learned about Gobert and the game got canceled, and then it's like, whoa, what's happening here? And if they cancel this game and they have to test him, what if he is sick? And then it's like, well, what if he's sick? Are his teammates sick? Are people he played against sick? Are medical, our training staff and coaches, are they vulnerable? Like how far does this thing spread? And it turns out Donovan Mitchell, of course, got tested positive too. I really think, like, you know, even after that, the I guess it was probably through social media, people pointed out that Gobert was joking around about coronavirus in prior days and was touching microphones of reporters. And that crazy, silly, juvenile act may have forced Adam Silver to do the right thing and suspend the season. Because then it was just like, well, if he's doing this to reporters' microphones, maybe he's, you know, passing germs along somewhere else as a joke. And you know, I'm not that he knew it, but just kind of joking around, touching, I don't know, someone else's equipment or something and passing the virus around. And I think they had no choice. I think it was a bold decision by Silver, and I'm so glad he did it because, you know, people talk about flattening the curve. And the one thing that and you mentioned it already, is that, you know, try to restrict large gatherings of people. And, you know, I mean, there was talk before that of playing in empty arenas, but still you have the logistics of travel, and these people are on the road and they're getting in contact with other people and going through airports and so forth. And so I think it was a very bold move by Silver, because our country really got caught flat-footed. Hopefully we don't pay too steep a price for that. But we were, I mean, let's face it, we could have responded much quicker to this, but we didn't have testing kits in place, and we're just kind of woefully behind.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I applaud Adam Silver just because I feel like it was a moment of real leadership, not as a sports commissioner, but just as a, you know, as an executive and as a person who could influence decisions of others, you know. And as you pointed out, it was just kind of like, it was the domino effect after that. We had, I can't remember the exact order, but I feel like was NHL next or MLB? I can't remember the order, but everything just kind of, I mean, I think the only sports that were going on last week was the players.
They didn't even do it. They canceled that too.
So there was nothing going on at all anywhere in the world, which is almost impossible to believe. It was a very decisive move, and it was the right thing to do. And it kind of got the ball rolling in a lot of ways. So that, like, I look at that one silly, crazy juvenile act by Rudy Gobert, rubbing his hands on the microphones of reporters, and that was kind of a large moment in history, if you think about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, there's no way you can overstate how big a moment that was. And at the time that I saw that, in real time, I guess, when the game was canceled and the season was suspended, I was furious. I was like, what are you doing? You're going to make the world shut down over this, which he did. Yeah. I just couldn't even believe how anybody could be that stupid. But, you know, to be honest with you, Chris, it may have almost been the best thing that happened, because if not for that, we would have gone another like 3 weeks before we had reached this point. And we might be in an even worse position today because of the lack of awareness and the lack of urgency taken by literally everybody. I mean, honestly, even after the fact, you had people trying to cram bars over last weekend. You had Mexico staging a music festival. I mean, what are we doing here? Like, it's just like, there's just a lot of self-centeredness in the world. And I think people just have this idea, it's not me, it doesn't matter. Well, it's going to be you if you keep acting like that, and it will matter. It hasn't already. So
yeah, and I don't want to beat on Rudy Gobert too much. I mean, I feel like he definitely, I mean, it was, I think he realized now it was very silly. He wishes he hadn't done it. I think didn't he donate like $500,000 to, I can't remember. I know he made a donation, mm-hmm. To get tests, to get tested out there. I don't want to kill him too much.
No,
I was in the same boat though. I will say I was angry when I saw that because it was like, man, that is crazy. But you know, I think that was probably a lot of people's mindset at the time.
Right.
And you know, at the time it was like escalating in Italy.
Yeah.
And we had already seen what it did in China.
Yes.
And I mean, where that whole province kind of went in lockdown. And,
yep. Yep.
So.
Yeah, I think in it's a very interesting perspective to have now, about a week later, on Gobert, because as angry as I was, it may even have been the kick in the pants that we needed as a country. It might have. I'm now thinking of it in perspective, and I'm thinking, what would have happened if he didn't do that? What would have happened if he didn't test positive that night? What would have happened if we had kept going with the NCAA tournament? And what would have happened if they played with fans? What would have happened if all these other sporting events kept going for another 2 weeks?
Disaster.
You're right. Just think about how this stuff can be, how these things can be exponentially multiplied.
Absolutely.
You know, as you mentioned, we were already behind the curve on this, but to be fair, literally every country was, right? Like, nobody was ahead of it. Maybe South Korea was good.
South Korea was way ahead of it.
South Korea, I think we can be very much commended. Yes, they were.
That is the success story.
100%. 100%. And it's like by a lot, too. It's like they've really done a great job.
Yeah.
But many countries weren't. Like, I don't think England was even ahead of the game. Like,
England's a mess. Boris Johnson is their prime minister. He wants to just let everyone do whatever they want. And his hope was that the virus would succumb to warmer weather.
That's too much time.
And you know, and the medical experts in the scientific community is looking at this and they're like, we don't know that this thing is a seasonal virus. Mm-hmm. So you may be waiting for something that's not coming.
Yeah.
So I don't know. England's going to be, I don't know. I don't know if they've switched their position. I think I read that they have, but that was their intent. It was like, oh, this thing's going to be dead in July. Well, one, July is a long way off.
Yeah.
And two, we don't know that, you know, I mean, it seems like there's a whole lot of factors with the viruses. Like, I mean, because everyone looks at the flu, and the flu is a seasonal, you know, it has a seasonality,
right,
where it, you know, it dies out, or, you know, the number of cases dies down as the warmer weather comes into play. But it's not just heat, it's also humidity. And then there's also a factor that people are going outside more. Viruses tend to do well inside, and the sun can kill, you know, can kill viruses. So people being outside more has an impact, and there's all kinds of, there's all different factors that go into this, but yeah, that was bonkers to me. But totally. South Korea is the one shining example.
So absolutely.
They're recording like, I don't know, like,
I think they started 800 total in the whole country.
Yeah, I mean like 10 a day, something like that.
Yeah, it's, and that's totally manageable. That's much, much better than pretty much any country.
Yeah.
I don't even think New Jersey has more cases per day than South Korea. That's a state. That's a single state.
Yeah, we're in for a rough ride, Dave. Because I think it's and you're right. You said it's a weird time. It's like, I feel like I'm waiting for a bomb to go off.
Well,
because I feel like we're like 2 or 3 weeks behind Italy.
And Italy warned us now that they've been kicked in the butt over this. They sent videos in a recent, this is reported in a few recent online news sites. They sent some videos and they were pretty much just sending this, called it, you know, like 10 days in the future us, and to be careful and be prepared. Or no, they were saying learn the lesson that we had, blah, blah, blah. I think that since the Rudy Gobert incident, we've finally gotten things together. But then we asked the question, is it too late? But just think of this. What if we could have been like, we could have waited another 2 weeks for this to happen. And that would have been, to me, that would have been catastrophic. So as bad as things are going to get, and you're right, I think things will definitely get worse in the next 3 weeks. Maybe let's say 2 weeks. It could have been way worse if not for that, for that moment. So it's strange, but I'm not going to say Rudy Gobert is a hero. But I am going to say that maybe, but that the moment itself, whether he wanted to or not, provided the very definitive call to action for us to really shut stuff down. And maybe in years to come, depending on how this goes, like you said, I don't know either. Like, I have no idea. This could be, I mean, I wouldn't say so much as to necessarily specifically thank him for that, but we might owe some gratitude for that being, you know, subversively the moment we needed to take this seriously. I don't know. I mean, to know that would depend on what would happen between now and the end of April. And at this point, I have no idea.
Yeah, let's hope for the best, right?
I think we can say definitively, though, that we saved ourselves a lot of trouble by getting into this week rather than 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. Because there very much was a chance, there was a very high probability of that happening if Rudy Gobert wasn't so negligent on his own hygiene. Just think of that.
Yeah, no question. Absolutely no question. I think, you know, just thinking how if it had been a day later, it affects the calculus of this thing. If they played, you know, I don't know, I can't even remember what day of the week it was, but like a Wednesday night slate of games in like, you know, six or seven arenas, it just seems like it would just have just a tremendous impact. So
yeah,
I totally agree. It's an interesting thing. Hopefully, you know, if we can look at this more critically in weeks and see, you know, hopefully the impact is not so severe.
I mean, it's just that we don't have the facilities to completely carry out the tests we're supposed to be carrying out to people, and we probably need 2 more weeks to figure that out. And so I already know that the number does have been growing a lot in recent days, which is expected. And about a week ago, I think we had like under 2,000 cases of coronavirus in the USA.
Yeah, a few days ago, like 4 days ago, it was like in the 1,500s. Now it's 6,481.
Yeah. Oh man, I think it went up in the hour then since I did the other show with in the hour since I last checked. So. Oh man, yeah. No, I mean, it's not surprising. I really think that this number is going to be somewhere around 50,000 or more.
I think it's going to be more than that.
Well, Dr. Ferrucci, I forgot his first name. Projected
Anthony Fauci.
Oh, is it Fauci? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Fauci had a worst case projection of 500,000.
Yeah.
And that's horrible.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, absolutely.
Of that infected, that's not fatalities. You're talking about infected or you're
that's
talking
just
about fatality?
That's just infected. That's just infected.
Yeah.
Not deaths. Just the ones with the coronavirus.
Yeah, 500,000 people.
And,
no,
but that's a large number. And yeah. But that's a worst case projection. And I am hopeful that we don't get. Now, I know we're going to get at least somewhere close to 100,000. Like that. Let's not mince words here. That's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, what's scary about this, and I read a really compelling article about it, mm-hmm. is just that the way it overwhelms the healthcare system. So, you look at the fatality rates, and they're all over the place in different countries. And,
right.
For example, like South Korea is extremely low, and I think it's like, you know, below, I think it's like a half of a percent. Which is five times higher than the flu. It's still awful, but it's controllable.
Right.
And then you look at Iran. I think Iran and Italy are around 7% fatality rate.
Man.
Because what you're seeing is like people, there, I think like 20% of the cases of this disease require intensive care, mm-hmm. Because people just cannot breathe. And so they need ventilators,
yeah.
need beds. And so the you know, the more you have that under control, the closer the fatality rate is going to be to the 1% or under 1%. Mm-hmm. If it overwhelms your healthcare system and you can't get people beds, then you're in a big trouble. And then, you know, you're talking about, you know, 7% of the infected end up dying, maybe even more, who knows? We don't have all the data yet, but I mean, it's so scary. And so that's why the flattening the curve thing is so important. It's just like,
there's no doubt,
you know, no just doubt. Isolate, do what you can now and go out only if you 100% need to, if you need medicine or you need food or whatever. Otherwise, you know, we could have a real disaster on our hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm thankful to the state governments around the country who seem to have gotten the message. I think some still haven't, but a lot of them have. The ones that need to have, I would say, you know, New York, California, Washington needed to get on the ball. And I would say they have. I mean, maybe they were late to start, but I think now that we are where we are, once the message was pretty clear on this situation, they seem to have acted reasonably well. So we're doing what we can.
Here's what I don't understand, and I know we're supposed to be talking about beer.
That's okay. Sorry, no problem.
It's such a compelling thing to me, but you know, what I've read is that in many cases the symptoms are extremely mild, and someone may have it, and you know, the symptoms may go away over a very short time. So I almost feel like I'm looking at these numbers: U.S. 6,481 at the moment. And I almost feel like those numbers are well under what the actual totals are, because I suspect that, well, first of all, we're not testing that much. So there's that issue, because we don't have the test kits where they can be implemented properly. And two, it's just like there are people, you know, kids, a lot of them, younger people who have it, and just, you know, they're not a number right now, you know? I mean, they're not, because they're not showing up at their doctor's office saying, "Doc, I don't feel well. What is this?" You know what I mean? So, so I don't even know. I mean, I think it's going to take a long time to sort out all the data from what, you know, how, you know, one, how widespread was this thing actually? Because I don't think our numbers are anywhere close to accurate. I would suspect they're not.
No. I mean, I think it's pretty much a consensus at this point that the numbers that we see right now are not an accurate representation. We probably have an early sample, like a small sample, and the sample isn't even properly projectable at this point. So that's, I assume it'll take about 2 weeks to figure that out.
Yeah.
We have a lot of places that have instituted closures around the U.S., around the country, and most of them go through the end of the month. And I find that interesting because it implies what I asked the question, well, what's going to happen after that? Are they just going to reopen everything again? And it doesn't seem like that's enough time. So I don't really understand the timetable. I'm thinking, is this just let's try this and then see what happens, and then if it's worse, we'll just stay closed another week? Like, I'm not keen on what the objective is. And this goes for everybody. Like, there are a lot of places that are closed with that specific timeline.
Yeah, I think it's easier to tell people, yeah, we're just going to shut down for 2 weeks rather than it might be a month, 2 months.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Then people start to freak out. Like, wait, what do you mean? Then, and people did panic a lot.
Yeah.
I think it would have been much worse. But if you do it, then you're like, you know what, another week, another 2 weeks, and you extend it, then it's like, okay, well, I've lived in this condition for a little while,
right?
And then I can, you know, I don't know. I think there's a psychological aspect to that.
I think that's a good observation. I think that's a good guess, because I think it's, you know, we both know that when you know some heavy news, sometimes you just want to bring it out in stages. Like when you have a projection and it's really bad, like for example, your car, and it's like the car is so bad that you can't drive it. And then, but it's just in a, it's bad in a way where it's kind of functional. Like, well, it'll start where you can drive it a little bit. You just can't have to put the, you know, you just have to be really careful when you brake, and you can't turn on the air conditioning, and then slowly other things start to break down. And I mean, there's a little bit of that involved, and I think you're right. I don't think you can just go out and say, hey, you can't use the car anymore, because then people will lose it. So perhaps that makes sense to me. I think that's I think when you talk about projects, it's the same idea. Like, you know this, you work in this field. When you have a project in design or development, whatever it is, you have a timetable for when you expect to complete the project. The release date is a certain date. But if things don't work out, then you can tell someone, well, we need to tweak this. It'll be another week. And so you say, all right, we got another week. All right. And then we need another week. When in reality, you're probably looking at it and you're like, we have this thing is complete. This thing needs so much work on it. And it's actually going to be like 4 weeks. But you bring it out in stages so that people don't get really people don't get crazy and suspicious on you. So that's my analysis of that. It makes sense. But to me, knowing what I know about the spread, knowing what I know about these businesses, it just doesn't seem realistic to me that they're all just going to magically open up on that exact date. It doesn't seem likely. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
What would you say that the most accurate time with the NBA's timetable to resume around mid-June or late July is accurate?
Oh man, I feel like we have no way of knowing.
It's hard to, it's really,
it really is. I mean, you look at Italy as like a model, like Italy is, you know, probably 2 or 3 weeks ahead of us and they're in full on lockdown now.
Yeah.
And their cases over the last 5 days have kind of stabilized. I mean, I'm not saying they're going down, but they're,
I think like they had 30. One day, like there were fewer cases today than there were yesterday. And I think that in itself is actually,
it's a positive that it's stabilized. Right. I'll say that. Yeah. I mean, it's, but like you're talking about like 1300 new cases a day.
Yeah. It's still a lot. It's still a lot.
It's crazy amount.
Yeah.
But it's been that in that kind of feels like it's plateaued because it's been, well, it's still a small sample, but it's been like 4 or 5 days of that.
Yeah.
It may have gone down. You may be right. I didn't look the exact numbers. It may have gone down slightly today, but,
but
until we get to that point, how do you know where the end is? You know what I mean?
Right. Very, very true. And I think the one thing though that we do need to, I do need to think about myself is that a lot of things can change in just one day. Like and so from that standpoint, I don't want to get too panicked about this lasting like a whole year because we don't know. Like things can change dramatically in even a week from now. What if they somehow have the miracle of discovering a vaccine that's consistently good for this particular type of coronavirus? That could happen.
The problem is you have to run like clinical trials on those things.
No, that certainly. It probably wouldn't be instant, but I'm just saying maybe at some point that will happen and then things rapidly start to recover. And then the other half of it is we don't want to be Italy, but we're not Italy. We don't have as many elderly people. We also aren't as closely populated. Our density is not as like an entire country. We don't have that much density compared to them.
For sure.
You know, and even like some of the cities that we're talking about, like Seattle and LA, they're not big on public transportation. So, well, Seattle might be, I'm sorry, but LA, no. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that that's as big a threat. By the way, the public transportation took a dive from the Rudy Gobert incident up to now. I'm not even on it anymore. I'm taking a car to wherever I go. So,
man, LA must be rough. I mean, I guess maybe so few people take it, it doesn't really impact.
Yeah, that's sort of like my thought. It's like anybody that's taken it pretty much is people who don't have a car, homeless. Yeah. I mean, it's a sad existence, certainly, but for what it's worth, because everybody's working, like so many people are working from home around here, the traffic is not terrible. There's still traffic though. It's kind of weird, but
Atlanta's really the same way. Atlanta's very much like people get in their cars, go where they're going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm a big public transportation advocate, which is funny that I live here, but in this case, maybe I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's not worth it now. Yeah. Like, but I guess that just goes to show you that even I was not on the ball with the situation. I don't think even I took it that seriously until right about the weekend, really, because I was still taking public transportation in the rest of that week, and after Rudy Gobert hit, and it was really as I started to visit my parents in Oxnard over the weekend, I started to realize, what am I doing taking the bus? I should need to stop taking the bus. So I decided, I was going to tell everybody I'm not going to take the bus for the foreseeable future. I'm going to take my car in whenever I need to go into work, and then I'll work from home the rest of the time. And then just in the 2 days after that, so from Saturday to Monday afternoon, things escalated so much that I took my car in and got my 1 day of parking for day parking, and they sent me home. So I don't even have to go back anymore. So I didn't even have to worry about that. Like the car part, it amounted to one trip. And maybe once in a while I might have to go back to campus for whatever reason. But as far as I know, I don't think I'm going back to UCLA for a long, long time. So, yeah. By the way, for people who do ride public transit to UCLA, the Bruin Commuter Club is offering refunds for the upcoming quarter. So if you haven't got in on that, you can. You actually can get a refund for the upcoming quarter pass because the chances of your ability to use it are going to be very minuscule. So I would advise an attempt at it, but we'll see. Anyway.
Little PSA there.
Absolutely. I thought that was worth saying. Anyway, the point of all that is to say that I think our lifestyles aren't quite in the same vein as Italy, and our demographics aren't either. So
Sorry, I just want to interject. The population in the U.S., while it is not as dense, the population in the U.S. is also over five times what the population of Italy. So,
well, the numbers are going to end up being, obviously, the numbers are going to be potentially even bigger. But that's just because we have so many people living here, you know? So that's not necessarily surprising.
Yeah.
But I think if you talk about the relative damage compared to the relative damage in Italy, I mean, there is reason to hold out hope that it won't be quite as bad. It's just hard to say at this point.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's just the fact that we already saw it. Like, we saw what Italy's been through.
Yeah.
So we were scared off enough by that. Some people aren't. Some people just don't get it. But don't worry. I think that decision will be taken out of their hands at some point soon enough, too. So I think it's very much... I don't know. I mean, obviously we could have done this better, but we also, as we can see, we could have done it worse too, as it turns out. So,
yeah. I mean, one thing, Italy is a different lifestyle. Like it's been a while since I've been there, but, they're very much a culture. I've been to, if you go to the cities, especially in the warmer, in the summertime, you go out on the streets at night, people are out, like, they hang out on those piazzas, and there's a lot of like street life. It's kind of crazy. Like, the U.S. is very much like focused on, I go to work, I come home, I watch TV, and I stay in my house. And it's just a very different mindset. Mm-hmm. So I think there's that factor in there as well, is that tend to be, less social creatures in a lot of ways. I hate to make generalizations, but that's just my own experience. Just from traveling.
But it's funny about that. I made a remark to some friends of mine about people moaning and groaning about the stuff being closed and not being able to leave the house. And I'm thinking to myself, like, weren't you guys like tethered to your phones in the beginning anyway? Like, what, how is this that? But it doesn't seem like it's going to end up being that much of a difference for a lot of people. If you think about it, it's like we're complaining about, oh my goodness, I can't do this and that. And I'm like, what were you doing anyway beforehand? I think a lot of people are just like on their computers or in their games or on their iPads and kind of staring at their screen. So I'm like, it's almost like an ideal situation for some of the folks of our younger generation.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as like no NBA, which kind of had my attention pretty much every night of the week.
Yeah.
To now, okay, I can read books, I can catch up on some TV shows or movies that I wanted to see, and you know, I don't have the pressure to go anywhere, so that's not going to happen. So
yeah,
and not that, I mean, it's, you know, that's sort of a silver lining, not really.
Right.
It kind of clears your mind and frees you up to do other things and maybe do stuff around the house, or I have a guitar here I want to fiddle with. I can pick that up and play it. I have more time, more free time, I guess.
Yeah, it's certainly the case. I think it gives me an opportunity to talk to people more. It's kind of funny in that regard. Like, I think you know very well that I was tied into like small, and I emphasize small, hypothetical wagering with various sports, and being off that for this long is definitely odd. But I miss the NBA. I miss it's a bummer. Like, we're not gonna get the rest of the season. I do think I wonder if they might do the playoffs. I honestly can't say, but it really kills the momentum for the teams at the top: Milwaukee, Lakers, Clippers, and I think whoever else was number two in the East. I guess who was number two in the East at that point? I'm trying to remember.
It was Toronto.
Oh, Toronto! Yeah, Toronto. Yeah, yeah. Man, what a shame! Goodness.
Yeah, it really is a shame, and it's like it raises so many questions, like about service time.
Yeah.
And like, you know, assuming they don't play anymore, I mean, hopefully they do, but assuming they don't, there are all kinds of discussions of like, well, we could do the playoffs in July. It's like, wow, are we going to do that? Then do you push the draft back, and then like, and then college basketball, like player eligibility, do guys decide to stay in school another year? Do they decide to go into the draft, even though maybe, you know, they didn't have that extra boost potentially from conference tournaments and March Madness that they might have gotten or were hoping for. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, what do we do with this season? It's, I mean, it's not even like a strike season. It's just like, it's so all encompassing. And like the contract aspect of it. Like, I mean, but the players getting paid, but you know, you lose like half a season of service time for guys. And I don't know. It's going to be when we finally get through all this and get it all sorted out, it's going to be kind of a mess.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but it's inevitable at this point, you know.
Yeah.
I think I've learned a lot in this entire month from the first to now. I really have. Like, I think my underestimation of what this coronavirus could do is kind of a mistake on my part. It's not something that obviously you would have heard during during any of the podcasts before we started the series, because at that, you know, once I got to the podcast, I was just talking about whatever the games were and the sports were. But in emails and private conversations, I thought, yeah, certainly it was a virus, and I did want to do my diligence with the hygiene and everything, but I never really anticipated the degree to which we would have to adapt our lives, and I was not that scared of going out to crowds at that point. But now I've learned, and now I think this is also going to be a learning moment for future generations too. It's like, now we know what to do if we see something of that degree again.
Absolutely. And it's about having safety nets in place. And I mean, just, I don't know, on a very, like, the most simple level, just like personal hygiene.
Yes.
Yes. Wash your hands. Yep. You know, I mean, I'm pretty good about that, but I mean, like, I've been like almost taken to an OCD level at this point where, you know, my skin is all dried out. I got to put lotion on my hands because I've been washing so much. Mm-hmm. But just, you come to the realization, oh my gosh, I touch my face so many times a day.
And yeah.
Yep.
I read an article, I think it was in the Times yesterday, saying that on average, people touch their face 12 times an hour. And I was like, wow, that is amazing.
That is.
And so you become much more conscious of those kinds of things.
Yeah,
those,
yeah.
Those parts of your own DNA that, I guess, cause you to form these habits.
Right on. Yeah. So we've all learned, haven't we? Like, I think many of us have been able to educate ourselves on how to treat ourselves better, how to cleanse ourselves better. And I think the thing that comes out of this, if we assuming that we can get through this and we can survive as a species, I guess I'd say at this point, assuming that things can come around and the curve does flatten and we can control the coronavirus within our nation and within the country, within the globe, really. I think we definitely will come out of that better people because now we know what to do. It kind of teaches us to use our survival skills. It teaches us to be good neighbors. It teaches us to do better with ourselves, and it teaches us responsibility at the same time. So it's definitely, there's definitely positives that can come out of such a brutal situation like this.
100%. I hope that is a good way to think about it, Dave. I like that. We need hope in this country, in the world. We just need hope. And I'd like to think you're right.
I would like to think I'm right as well. Because, man, if we just repeat the same mistakes again, I'm just going to be crushed.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Okay, so let's talk about some beer. You know.
Back to minutes. Beer.
We'll talk about beer. But, you know, I think the beer scene certainly is great everywhere. But one that doesn't get talked about enough is the scene where you are in Georgia. And it sounds to me like the scene is real. What are some of the beers you've really enjoyed since you've been living in Georgia?
Wow, just like that, huh? No discussion of California. We'll just go right into Georgia?
Well, because I think California's spoken for. We've got a lot of great beers, you know? Yeah. Like, we have had... is that where you first started seeing craft beer? Like, your first interaction with it was here in California?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, like, I would say my... I mean, Sam Adams is a craft beer. I mean, right? I mean...
One of the first,
Yeah, and I mean, so that's definitely... you know, that's my first experience. I don't know. I mean, you know, there was a brewery I used to like when I lived in New York called New Amsterdam. And I don't know what happened to them, but they had a really good ale that I used to love. And, I'm mostly joking with you, Dave. I mean, I really love the California breweries a lot. Like Lagunitas, for example, I really like that. And, I mean, there are a few others, but yeah, Georgia's kind of come on. I mean, when I first moved down here in 98, there was a brewery called Sweetwater, which is sort of like the Sam Adams of Georgia, because it almost doesn't feel like a craft brewery anymore, because it's, you know, it's kind of, you can find it anywhere. In the Southeast, really. And they have, you know, they have a really good IPA, and they have a pale ale called the 420, which is a reference to sort of a counterculture marijuana term. And so there's that, and but they've kind of grown, and their whole attitude is they want to save the Chattahoochee, so they're very much into kind of environmental causes. But like I said, you can go anywhere from probably, you know, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. I'm sure you could find it in Alabama. I've never been there. But anywhere pretty much in the Southeast, and you can get Sweetwater. So, like I said, they've been going strong for, it's now over 20 years. But for a long time, that was the local brewery. And they're probably a mile and a half from my house. I mean, you know, I could walk there, no problem. They have good tours, and if you want to sample stuff, it's terrific. So if you're down here, I will, and you're interested, I'll take you over there.
I'm quite interested in Sweetwater. That sounds great. I get yeah. like a big name over there, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I feel like it, you know, they're almost in that same place where it's like, you know, where Sam Adams was like a craft beer. And like, I just because they're such a big name now and they're so widely distributed that I can't look at them the same way. I feel similarly about Sweetwater, but the beer is excellent. It's great beer. And then like, you know, like in the last probably like 5-6 years, some other ones have kind of popped up. I mean, there's, you know, not all necessarily in Atlanta, I mean, one of them that I've been drinking a lot is Terrapin. And I may have mentioned this, maybe I haven't, but I love, I'm a big IPA fan, and they have a IPA called Hops Executioner, and they're out of Athens. I don't know if I mentioned this. So Terrapin out of Athens, Georgia, where University of Georgia is. And they have a really good IPA Hops Executioner, which is very high in alcohol concentrate. And it's like 7.3% ABV. Very bitter. If you like that sort of thing, I mean, if you pour a glass, you'll see the little pieces of hops in there. I mean, it's literally like that. But they're good. They have some other IPAs that I like. But again, you know, it's like they've been around since, you know, I mean, almost 20 years themselves now, and so they're kind of a big name too. And then like, you know, more recently, like in the last, like I said, in the last 5 years, you've seen other ones pop up. I'm trying to think. Creature Comforts is a really good local one, out of Athens. And they have a IPA that I love called Tropicalia, which has a little bit more of like a fruity flavor, but very good. And they actually have a lager that, and like I said, you won't see me drinking lager that much, but if I do it, they have a lager. I'm sure I remember the name right now, but that's another good one. And there's also Thursday Night Brewing, and I'm trying to think of some of the others, but yeah, it's kind of, you know, there's a bunch that have like kind of popped up in the last, Basement IPA is another one of my favorites. That's, I'm trying to remember that brewery. It is Scofflaw. And because it's a basketball podcast, they have a relationship with the Atlanta Hawks. And the Scofflaw Basement IPA is a good one. So if you go to a Hawks game, you can get there. That's another one I like. And so it's you've kind of seen this sort of trickle of these microbrews that are all quite good. I honestly tend to kind of stick with the ones that I like a lot. I don't sample as much as I used to. So in my refrigerator now, I have a bunch of Tropicalia. And I have a bunch of Scofflaw, and I'm a little boring in that regard, Dave. I mean, it's not that I'm open to trying new things. It's just like, well, I just want to, you know, kick back, have a beer, watch the game. I'm just going to go with what I know. It's kind of a vibrant scene though. And someday I'll have to have you down here. We'll you can sample some of the local brews.
That would be a lot of fun, Chris. And I, while you said that you didn't, you feel like you've only, you haven't really been as adventurous as you think, I still think you've really ran into a lot of good choices. And I wrote some of them down here for my future reference. So Scofflaw, I want to get in on that.
Yeah, definitely. That's good.
And then the
basic... I said Thursday Night Brewing. It's Monday Night Brewing. I'm sorry.
Monday Night Brewing. Okay.
And I think their IPA is Night on Ponce, which is really good. Hmm. And Ponce is a main street that cuts east-west on... it's Ponce de Leon Avenue. So if you've ever been to Atlanta, you'll know it. And it cuts east west, and so it's called Night on Ponce is the name of their IPA. It's very good too. You don't see it quite as much. I mean, they don't seem to be covered as well, but that's a good one as well.
Well, I think it's a great rundown, even if you've only touched the tip of the iceberg with Georgia beer. It really sounds like there's a lot going on down there. So don't sell Georgia short. They've got some good brews too, and it's always cool when you have a brewery that's that close to you, where it's like you could drive like 10 minutes to get there. That's a nice feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to think where some of the other ones are. I mean, there's another one I used to work up. Well, I didn't work up there. My company was based in Alpharetta, and there's a brewery called Jekyll. And I used to just get like, you know, you can get those howlers, you know what those are? Those little jugs you fill in.
Yeah. I thought they were called growlers, but the giant.
Oh, no, growlers. There's, what did I say?
Howlers.
Howlers. Yeah, growlers. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But Jekyll is another good one, and I'm trying to think of some of the others. But yeah, you're right. That's like a 30 minute drive. But they kind of popped up all over the place. Again, yeah. I'm not nearly as adventurous as I used to be. I just cannot do it, but yeah, it's quite a scene, and it's exciting. It's always fun to try new things when they come around. So
oh, definitely. And whenever you're out and about, you definitely want to try the brews at any place you visit. So I'm always excited to hear about new beers. So I realized I was supposed to do a setup to this, so I apologize. But I'm very happy. That was a very good rundown. I will give you the scene here in California, and I think for those of you not in the state, I can give you all the classics. Sierra Nevada up in Chico, California, that's in the Bay Area. And Anchor Steam, which is around San Francisco, that's so very close to where Sierra Nevada is. In the Central Coast, you're looking at Firestone, which is out of Paso Robles. And they are the de facto beer vendor of choice over in Santa Barbara, where I used to live for 4 years. Really good. And then down here, you've got a lot of choices. In the LA area, you're talking about things like, you know, Angel City Brewing Company. That's pretty good. And you're looking at, and then all of these, like, you have good different types of beers. Like, even just Firestone has like a whole different range of types of beers. So you're a big IPA guy, and their double barrel IPA ale was always a great winner for me. That was my go-to when I was up in Santa Barbara all those years. I just loved
it. Wait, which brewery is this? I'm sorry.
Firestone?
Okay.
Not to be confused with the tire company or any of that. Firestone Brewery in the Central Coast of California. And the brewer I liked the most for a long time was their double barrel ale. And so you'll see that out there. A double IPA. Really, okay. Really good. Really good. And but then they have like porters and darker beers like the Wookiee Jack, and then they have other beers in between. They have lighter beers and they have all kinds of beer. Same situation for Alesmith, and they are down in San Diego, and their beer scene is incredibly vast. They have a wide range of beers. Now for you, my friend, the IPA fan, I mentioned the Tony Gwynn themed Pale Ale 394. It's just one of the best beers there is. So good. I can't wait for you to try it when you're up over in San Diego next time. You got to try it. It's so good. It's a darker IPA, but it is an IPA nonetheless, and it's just fantastic. It kind of goes down so smooth. It's going to be one of your favorite beers of all time, Chris. I believe it.
Okay.
And they have a darker beer, which I am a huge fan of, called the Nut Brown Ale. Now, I don't know how I quantify, how I classify this beer. It seems to be like a porter. It seems to me like a stout, but I don't really know. It's got a little amber quality to it. I guess I would say it's a stout. Kind of along the same lines of like another darker beer, not from California, called the Kutzreizer. Really good dark ale. I think you could consider that a stout as well. And so between them and Nut Brown Ale, I am home. And another one of the darker beers that I like is the, there's a couple of them that the one I told you about too. And one of them is the Deschutes. Now I forgot it, but there's a Deschutes porter, I think. It's called the Black something or other. Let me hold on. I'll look it up. This won't take long. Deschutes beer, dark. I'm trying to remember now. Oh, here it is. The Black Butt Porter. That is just phenomenal, amazing beer. And then there's one that's like it, and I'm trying to remember what the brand was. I think.
Oh, Black is that Black Butte?
Black Butte, yes. Excuse me.
Okay.
Yes, no Black Butte Porter. Black Butte Porter. And you probably can get to that, because if you go to a local beer store or a BevMo or Total Wine and More, you'll find it.
You can get Deschutes here.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's Portland, right? That's the Portland?
Yeah, they're over. Yeah. I think they're specifically in Bend, Oregon.
Okay, Bend.
But they're in Oregon. So it's pretty much in the same vicinity. So, yeah, just one of my favorite companies of beer. Like I told you about the Fresh Haze IPA and the Fresh Squeezed IPA. Oh, amazing. And I think the Fresh Squeezed one is even better than the Fresh Haze one. I'm trying to remember which one it was that I get at the store, but my goodness, it's so good. It's just I need to go get another round of that. But my current brew, the one I'm on this week, is one that Junkie recommended, and it is the Founders All Day Session IPA. He was a big proponent of that beer, and they happen to have a 15 pack of it at the store right by me.
I've had that.
Oh, you've had it. Okay. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I remember liking it, but it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can get that. You can get that here.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense because they're out of Michigan. Yeah. So I figure now I think Junkie explained that some big company bought them out, so now they're distributing it all over the place. So anybody, wherever you live, you can get, I think you can get a Founders Session IPA if you can find the right store. So it's pretty much nationwide now. In New York, their beer scene isn't really as impressive to me as the others, but I always gravitate towards the Brooklyn lager, which I don't think it's not so much a lager. It seems more like an IPA, but the Brooklyn one is terrific. I really like that one.
Yeah, and that's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I slipped my mind when I was talking about New York beers, but you're right.
Yeah.
It's funny. I don't want to go on a tangent because you have, but there is a brewery in, actually there's a couple in the Bronx now where I grew up. And I haven't tried them yet. I've actually heard good things about them. There's Gun Hill Brewing and Bronx Brewery. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't mean to sidetrack your
These are good recommendations, though. I mean, I think I'm going to need some more tips on beer up there because, I mean, it's a war zone right now. I shouldn't say war zone. That's bad taste. But it's kind of in a tough spot right now. But I think when things settle down in New York, I would love to try out some more beers over there because I do need to sample a little more of it. So what were those names again?
Yeah, Gun Hill Brewing Company and Gun Hill Road is a big road up in the Bronx, close to where I grew up. And then the Bronx Brewing, I think that's, I can't remember exactly where that is. My sister told me about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's, that's, to me, is kind of unthinkable that there's like two microbrews in Bronx.
In the Bronx.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, like that's where we are with beer though, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's just kind of everywhere. So.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I think that's a good lead into Junkie's question for you. He has a couple of random questions.
Okay.
You excited? Ready?
Let's see. I'll do my best.
Okay. What are you, so the first question is what he calls a serious question.
Uh-oh.
And he asks, what are you most excited about with regards to the craft beer scene today?
Man, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not the beer expert, so I don't keep up that much. And I don't know. I just feel like there's, specific with ales and IPAs, there's always like a new flavor or a new just kind of subtle taste that pops up and sort of takes me away. But I don't know. I'm excited to try new things, I guess. Mm-hmm. But if there's a specific trend, that's a toughie. I don't know. What about you? How would you answer that?
Well, I think the best answer I have for that is what I'm most excited about is the proliferation of craft beer. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not anything new. That's been happening for a good decade or so. But I think if you compare beer where it was, we talked about this before. If we compare where beer was 15 years ago to today, it's just exploded. And I think the ubiquity of craft beer is my favorite thing about it right now. Like, I think it's wherever you go, there's like something cool to try out.
That's a good answer. Yeah. Like I was just saying, two microbrews in the Bronx, New York.
That's awesome. Yeah. Just goes to show that it doesn't matter where you live, you can have a nice craft beer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I see, here's one, like, what's a state that you haven't really thought of beer about that you might find that you'd be interested to try? Like, maybe see if there might be that diamond in the rough there.
Well, so I'll give you an answer that doesn't quite answer the question, but I spent a decent amount of time in Salt Lake City a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And they have like a little vibrant scene there, which is kind of funny, like, as you think of it as the home to the Mormons and the Mormon Tavern Choir and all that. But, right. And then they famously don't drink, but they actually, it's been a while, so I can't remember some of the beers I had there, but they were quite good. Another state, a physical state that I have not been to, but I would like to try the beer. That's the question, right?
Yeah, because like if think of a state where you wouldn't think of beer being a thing there.
Yeah, like, my answer would have been Utah, but I've been there.
That's a great answer. That's a really good answer. Yeah.
If I think of another one, what would another one be?
All right.
You know, that is a great question. I mean, I've been there plenty of times, but Florida has like some good beer in the Tampa area. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of what is that? They have a really good IPA. Hialeah, Cigar City Hialeah.
Oh, have you had that? I had it when I was in Orlando, and we also took a little mini trip to Tampa.
Yeah,
maybe I did have the Hialeah when I was there. It sounds familiar.
Yeah, I kind of write off Florida, and maybe it's just kind of because they're a neighboring state, and I just think of like Jimmy Buffett's beer. But
don't use that.
No, I know, but I use that as to denigrate them. But I think there's probably something to dig into there.
Yeah.
Maybe Miami has some good other, the Tampa area might have some good other things to sample. So that would be my choice. A, because they're close, it'd be a short car ride, and I think maybe there's some untapped potential there. That's my answer. Utah. What about you? What's your answer?
Yeah, Utah was a very good answer, and Florida's a good one too, because I think it's another state where beer does not seem to be the first thing that comes to mind when you think of them. So here's my answer. My answer, number one, is Nebraska, because I can't even conceive as to what kind of a possible craft beer they could make there. And I think it would be a very prudent decision to go to Lincoln and see if their college town has some good craft beer. I think they do.
I bet they do. Yeah.
I think they do. I think I'm going to learn something when I get over there.
I've never been to Nebraska, so I can't. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I like that answer.
Yeah, I think that would be a very fascinating choice. And what's funny is that Nebraska is so close to Colorado. Like, you just don't even visualize that, but it really is. Like, if you look at the map closely, Colorado and Nebraska are practically next to each other. Like, I'm like, I had no idea they were that close. Like, I just, you don't think of them as being that close, but they are actually closer than you realize.
Yeah. Yeah. Nebraska has that little cutout, and that's the corner.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Yeah. I mean, culturally, they're so different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right? I think that's what it is. It's like, you just don't, you don't think of them that way. And, you know, when I was in Denver, the last time I was in Denver, I was obviously doing the bar thing with my friend Coach, and we saw some people watching the Wyoming game who looked like they actually were from Wyoming because they had all the gear on. They're watching. It's a regular season game. I mean, this is going on while Oregon is playing Auburn. All right, so if you're coming out to a bar to watch that game while Oregon is playing Auburn on another giant room in the corner of the building, then you're obviously pretty dedicated. So they must have actually made the, you know, they must be visiting. They must have made the trip in from wherever Wyoming is, Laramie or wherever it is. And Wyoming is close to Colorado too, because it's like adjacent to them. So I just thought that, just, you know, it just doesn't really sink in until you experience it firsthand. It's like, this is right next to all of this. It's like, wow. Like, you're, I think Colorado is also next to Utah. So they're very close to all these states.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Colorado, Denver especially is like another good one, just because they have like a huge, mature microbrew scene there. Yep. I've spent, I'm trying to think of, like, I remember having like, is it Yeti? Does that ring a bell?
Does.
I'm trying to remember.
Not acutely, but it does. I do remember the word Yeti involved with a beer.
That's the funny thing
about Denver's, like, I can't remember the names of any of the beers, but I loved them a lot. They were really good.
I think it's Great Divide is a brewing company.
And, okay.
Yeti Imperial Stout. I remember having that.
Ooh, we went for a stout that night. Look at that. Yeah. Good times. Okay, so let me give you another state. Let me see. I mean, that Nebraska one was a very interesting one for me because I'm just like, I don't think of beer there. Okay, here's another. Idaho. What in the world would Idaho do for beer? I would really be interested to know if there's some craft brew in Idaho.
Oh, man. Boise has to have really good scene.
I think so. I just wonder what their lean would be. I wonder where they would go. Would they go darker or lighter? Because, you know, San Diego, everybody's big on the Sculpins. Like, they really like, everything that has like a grapefruit tinge or orange peel tinge. I mean, that's the biggest forte for San Diego, but they do a lot of different things, but that's definitely the lean, and Ballast Point is the leader of that lean. They really, I feel like they have really set the bar in terms of Sculpins. They're just very good. Like, it's incredible.
Well, you know, my favorite brewery of all is down there. It's not quite in San Diego, but Stone is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in the area. Absolutely. Yeah. A terrific beer. A beer company. Yeah. So that's very good. So, yeah, so you have Utah, which is, again, an excellent choice, and Florida. And then I have, for my states, unlikely states to have a brew scene, I have Idaho and Nebraska. So that'd be a good road trip.
Yeah, I'm unprepared. I wish I could remember some of the beers I had in Salt Lake City. This is going back like 8 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
last time I was there.
Things but change in 8 years, too, so don't worry about it.
But it was surprising just to, to see, you know, and just to try new things. Like, you know, it's one of the, I mean, honestly, Dave, that's like one of the joys of traveling for me, is just, you know, going to another town, just trying the local beer. And I mean, of course, I forget it. I don't take notes. So, but just that anticipation, and maybe I'm going to hit on something great, you know?
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely. So, that's awesome. I think it's a good one. It's good that we end that. We kind of get into a higher note here. And I have another random question for you from Junkman. This is the
Junkman's been busy. I mean, he's like, okay.
Oh yeah, he's really excited to be, as he says, in a role reversal, where he's asking the questions this time instead of answering them. So
yeah.
It's pretty cool. All right. So the second question is, would you rather drive a beer delivery truck or work on a farm that grows hops?
I don't like driving, so I think I'd much rather be on the agriculture side of things.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
And then, like, I would think, like, look, if I were growing hops, and I've never done this, but I would be more inclined to get into the whole, like, homebrew kind of scene, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I have the raw materials there to make beer, and I think that's something I think I could kind of get into. Driving a truck, not so much. I don't know. how do you answer that? I grew up in New York. I don't like to drive.
It's a sensible answer. I went with the driving anyway. I just love the idea of driving a truck and then delivering beer and happy faces on the arrival of beer.
Okay.
And then I'm kind of hoping in the end of that, there's some kickback. Oh, you get like a 30% discount on our company's beer. That's a hopeful thing with that. But they're both good choices, you know? I think you have a great career ahead of you with the hot farm. Absolutely.
I know nothing about it. Like, I don't even know like what kind of year is the harvest and all that.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know either. This could be a very educational experience for everybody.
Mid-August in September, so you're looking at a late summer harvest for hops. All interesting. Right.
No doubt about it. Well, yeah, I just wanted to repeat a couple points.
I love that, Junkman. Keep them coming. That was a good job.
Yeah, for sure. Junkman, you're doing great with these random questions, and I'm excited to field more of them for our future shows, but just a tremendous job tonight. You had two, and those were very good choices. Very good questions. So, Chris, it really is great to talk to you again. I'll give it to you for final thoughts. I mean, it's certainly been an unusual time for us, but I appreciate your insight.
Yeah, no, it's the funny thing is I'm still like kind of trying to heal from this cold. And so, we're talking about beer, and all of a sudden I'm kind of craving a beer, even though I'm just on some medication that I should not be taking or should not be mixing with beer. So I'll have to just postpone that. But yeah, it's a rough time right now we're going through. It's good to connect with friends and, talk to people and, it's important that social distancing, you can distance yourself socially in one way and not in others. And so talking to people like this is good because we, it's a health crisis, but it doesn't have to be a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. So this was a lot of fun, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Even though, we spent a small fraction of the time on beer discussion. It was good. I enjoyed the talk and hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. And just one more thing before I let you go. I am really glad that we took the Rudy Gobert incident head on, because I think that if there was anyone qualified to talk about it, it was you, with as much as you followed the NBA. And it was really interesting to hear your thoughts, and I can't appreciate that enough. Chris, you've been great. Thank you so much. All the best, and be safe, and get well soon too.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Dave. Take care and keep in touch. Let me know what's going on.
All right. Well, until we meet again, I don't know when. I don't, it's like, when's our next NBA report?
Who knows? I'll tell you what, by the time it comes back, I'll be raring to go.
Yeah, me too. I just hope that they can somehow find a way to get the playoffs in. I mean, it would really be nice. I mean, I don't think we need to play any more regular season games. Like, I don't think that's necessary at this point.
I'd be fine with that, Dave. I mean, I've always been advocating either you shorten the season or you shorten the playoffs, one or the other. And if this is the case where we played, I don't know, 60 games, I'm all for that. Let's get into the playoffs. You could actually shorten the playoffs too. You could do, top four in each conference and away we go.
Oh, I'm good with that. Yeah. Like, do we really need to see Memphis? I mean, sorry, Memphis, but.
Yeah, no, I don't want to see that. Just shorten it up, have a good, nice 18 playoff, and it'd be a lot of fun.
Yep.
And people would be fired up because they'd be in the mood for something, some other kind of diversion, some entertainment that would take them out of the current mess room.
Here's an interesting question, since we're this does tie into everything that we've talked about already. Do you think that the NBA would entertain a shortened playoff format that just didn't happen to have fans, or do you think they would be willing to wait it out a little longer for the possibility of getting fans involved?
Wait, say that again. So you're saying a playoff format?
Would they do the playoff with no fans in the building, or would they just hold out a little bit more for the sake of fans?
Again, I don't know what this looks like, you know, when we come out on the other end of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about this, it's almost like an arc, hopefully. And hopefully it's, you know, we get to the other side pretty quickly. But I think I was reading an article in the Times about Singapore today and how they've kind of like gone back to like, you know, normal life. And I mean,
okay.
Coronavirus is a reality there, but, you know, it's like they have it under such control that, you know, people are still going to get sick, but it's, you know, it's not going to overwhelm them.
Okay.
And if that's the case, you know, I mean, then you could see going back to full people in arenas again. But I don't know. I would think the NBA would want fans in the seats. It's just, you know, there's no substitute for having that kind of interaction. I mean, it's,
yeah. With basketball, know, absolutely. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You had another point.
No, I was just going to say, like, I can't even imagine what basketball, NBA, you know, like a Lakers Clippers series and there's no one in the building. Like, what?
Oh, that would,
that would be very, I don't know. I can't. It'd be very strange. Even as a viewer on TV, it would just really lose something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think absolutely basketball loses something without fans. I think there are some sports where you can get away with it, but I don't really see it with basketball. It's just not the same. So I'm with you. Okay. Well, once again, just to repeat, I thank you again and all the best. And like you said, we'll be in touch. It's good to talk to you again, Chris.
Same here. Thanks so much for having me. This was nice. Appreciate it.
You got it, bud. You got it. Thank you so much. All right, take care.
All right, take care.
That's Chris in Georgia. That's our program. And thank you very much for listening, everybody. Hope you're out there safe and you're warm and you're healthy. And we'll continue to bring you some good entertainment the rest of the way as we continue the anthology. So up next in our series, we go to the letter E. What is E? We'll share that with you when we come back. But until then, follow us on DidCow on Twitter and on the web at www.didcow.com. And follow us on Apple Podcasts, Dave in the City Out West. We'll see you next time.